Welcome back to Murderlicious. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Lauren.
And today we're going to talk about the mysterious disappearance of Bryce Laspisa. Bryce disappeared in August of 2013 at age 19 years old. He was the only child of Mike and Karen Laspisa. He was a happy and funny guy who loved to draw and build. He lit up a room with his huge smile. In the photos and videos that we've seen of him on his Facebook, he appears to be a huge goofball and super likable. His girlfriend said that he could make friends with anyone, and everyone that met him liked him instantly. He was very social. He had tons of friends. People say he was an open book. Bryce graduated high school in Naperville, Illinois in 2012. After high school, he moved to California to attend Sierra College, which is a community college in Rockland, California. His parents also decided they wanted to move to California and retire, so his parents moved to Laguna Niguel, California, which is about 6.5 hours south of where Bryce's college was in Rockland. Bryce was studying graphic and industrial design. His freshman year, he lived in the dorms, and he met his girlfriend Kim, and then she transferred to California State University, Chico, for sophomore year. Bryce's mom, Karen, said that he was super respectful to his girlfriend Kim. So like I said, Bryce went to Sierra College and he had just started his sophomore year. The freshman year he lived in the dorms, he did really well in school and he made the dean's list. During freshman year, towards the end, he had a falling out with his roommate in the dorms, Nick Cavina. And over the summer, he lived at home with his parents in Laguna Niguel. And then for his sophomore year, he moved into an apartment with his friend Sean Dixon, and his parents helped him move into that apartment in August of 2013, where he was living when he went missing. Lauren, why don't you walk us through the timeline of the events before he went missing?
So Monday, August 26th was Bryce's first day of sophomore year, and he talked to his mom, Karen, around 5 o'clock to tell her that he went to class and he had a great first day. And Karen said that he seemed really happy and really normal. The next day, on Tuesday, his girlfriend Kim noticed a really strange shift in his behavior, and Bryce called her that morning to tell her that he took Vyvanse, and Kim said he really didn't sound like himself. He broke up with her over text out of the blue, and she drove to his apartment to see what was going on.
So Kim's college, she goes to Chico State or something like that, right?
Yeah, she goes to Chico State, which is an hour and a half north of Bryce's apartment.
So she must have been really, really worried to drive all that way in the middle of her beginning classes, too. Remember, this is
the first
new year for her, too.
Yes.
And it's a new school for her. Hadn't she just transferred? So he really was acting very odd.
So Kim drove to his apartment to see what was going on. And she said that Bryce was acting really weird. He wanted to break up with her. And she was super confused, so she left and she went to a friend's house nearby, which I'm assuming is around Bryce's apartment. So Bryce showed up to her friend's house, and he said that he wanted her back. Kim said that he was acting even more unlike himself than he was before. And she ended up going back to his apartment with Bryce, and she slept over. The next morning on Wednesday, she said that he was acting a little bit better, but he didn't remember breaking up with her. So she went back to Chico for class. They talked a few times during the day, and they talked about how much they love each other, how they're going to be together forever, and how Bryce wanted to marry her. So they were really just talking about their future. I guess they patched up that whole breakup thing. So Bryce's roommate Sean and Kim were very worried about Bryce. So Sean ended up calling Karen, Bryce's mom, that night to say that he was acting really strange and really not like himself. He told her that...
Wait, Sean called Bryce's mom?
Yeah.
I've never in my life heard of a guy calling another guy's mom.
Yeah.
But he must have really been acting really strange.
Yeah, Sean was really worried about Bryce because he broke up with Kim and then... He started to talk more about Bryce's strange behavior, and he said that it started when he stayed up all night to play video games. Apparently, he took Vyvanse to stay up and play video games all night, and Vyvanse, I didn't say this earlier, but it's kind of like an Adderall, and you need an ADHD prescription to have it, and Bryce didn't, so it was someone else's. But college kids, I guess, used it for late-night energy, so he must have gotten it from one of his friends at school. Sean also said that Bryce was drinking alcohol throughout the day and that he said that something was really bothering him, but he never explained what it was. So a couple hours later, Bryce shows up to Kim's house in Chico. Kim called Bryce and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And he said, "I'm sitting outside your apartment." She went outside and he broke up with her again. And she's basically like, what the hell is going on? And he said that he took Vyvanse.
Yeah, she was probably like super excited that he like drove there to surprise her. And she was like thinking he had like flowers or something. And he's like, no, I want to break up.
Kim was obviously really confused, really worried. So she didn't want Bryce driving back the hour and a half back to his apartment. So she took his keys away. So Bryce was getting really frustrated and he called his mom saying, hey, Kim won't give me my keys back. So Kim ended up getting on the phone with Karen and told her why she was worried. And she's like, okay, give the phone back to Bryce. So Karen told Bryce that she wanted to fly to him the next day. And remember, she lives like 6.5 hours away. So I guess it kind of makes sense why she would fly.
I mean, 6.5 hours to drive for me is nothing. But at that point, like she also could have been like brushing it off like, oh, Bryce is just being Bryce. Like she didn't know exactly how weird he was being. I mean, at that point, you would think that she would be kind of alarmed because his roommate is calling him. But I also got the impression from like the vibe of like his Facebook and like pictures that like his friends were like also close with his parents too. So maybe that wasn't weird that the friends were calling her. I don't know.
So Bryce says to his mom, no, don't make an airline reservation until I talk to you because I have a lot to talk to you about. So Karen gets back on the phone with Kim and she says, hey, you can give Bryce his keys because he was acting totally lucid, totally normal. He, according to Karen, he didn't seem heartbroken. So Kim's roommate also did tell Karen that he seemed fine to drive. So Karen was like, okay, just go home, call me in the morning.
So home back to his apartment.
Yeah. So Bryce leaves Kim's house around 11:30 p.m. and he begins the drive back to what we assume would be his apartment. So at 1 a.m. on Thursday, the 29th, the phone rings at the Las Pisa house. And Karen missed the call, but she assumed that it was Bryce saying that he got home safe because this is about an hour and a half after he left Kim's. And that kind of makes sense. Like he would get home back to his apartment in an hour and a half. So later on, phone records show that he was actually in a desolate area an hour away from his apartment, and he was headed further south towards the Tehachapi Mountains. So at this point, it really seems like he's conflicted about something or something happened that made him not want to go back to his apartment. At 11 a.m., the Las Pisas get a voicemail from State Farm Roadside Assistance saying that their plan was used. So Karen calls Bryce, and he doesn't answer, so she calls his apartment. And Sean answers, and Karen says, hey, is Bryce still sleeping? And Sean says, no, Bryce didn't come home last night. So Karen and Mike are a little confused, so they end up checking their credit card. And their credit card was used in Button Willow. And this is an area west of Bakersfield, best known as a truck stop off of I-5. And this is halfway between Sierra College and Laguna Niguel's, but it was a little bit closer to Laguna Niguel, I think about 2.5 hours. So it seemed like he was on his way to his parents' house, and if he'd stayed on that path, he would have been there in under 3 hours. The charge came from Castro Truck and Tire, which is a repair shop near the freeway, and Mike, which is Bryce's dad.
I think it was actually Bryce's, technically his stepdad, but he did adopt him. I don't think that he had a relationship with his real father. We didn't find any information about that.
Right, so Mike calls the repair shop, and this man named Christian answers, and he's a driver that serviced Bryce's car around 9 a.m., like 2 hours before. So he said that he serviced the car at a Button Willow rest stop, and he delivered 3 gallons of gas around 9:30 and charged $20 to the parents' credit card.
Right, but I also read that when Christian delivered the gas, Bryce wasn't in his car. And, like, he was, like, driving away thinking it was, like, oh, I guess the guy doesn't need gas. And then Bryce called him back and was like, dude, wait, come back. I'm here. And then he gave him the gas.
So at this point, Karen is still calling Bryce and she's not getting an answer. And at noon, Bryce is still not at his parents' house. So they're kind of concerned because if he got gas at 9:30, then he should have been back to his parents' house by then if that's where he was going. So Karen called Christian back. And he offered to go check on him because he could hear the concern in Karen's voice. So Christian says to her, okay, just give me 15 minutes and I'll go back just in case he's there. Like maybe something happened. Maybe he didn't have enough gas to get to a gas station.
I've heard everywhere that Christian is like a really super nice guy and I'm sure the police looked into him. But to me, that is kind of like too nice. I don't know. Maybe Californians are nicer than we are.
So Christian goes back to the rest stop where he left Bryce and he finds him in the exact same spot that he left him 3 hours ago. And he said that his eyes were a little bit red, but he seemed okay. And at 12:30 is when Christian finally hands Bryce the phone. And Karen's on the other line and she says, Bryce, what are you doing? And he said, oh, I'm not doing anything. Karen says, okay, well, you're about 3 hours away, so go get some gas and come home. So now he's expected by 3 p.m.
Wait. So at 9:30, Christian brings him 3 gallons of gas. And he sat in his car in the same spot from 9:30 until 12:30 with the car running because this is August in California. It's very hot. He would have ran out of gas again. So he must have been outside of his car. There's no way his car could have been left running with 3 gallons of gas for that long, right?
I'm not sure what the mileage or the gas on that.
You're not a gas expert?
Yeah. So Karen starts calling Bryce at 3:30 because he's still not home. So he's not answering and Karen's continuing to leave him messages. She's thinking maybe there's traffic. It's a holiday weekend. It was right before Labor Day. But now it gets to 6 p.m. and they haven't heard from Bryce in 6 hours. He's totally ignoring them. So Mike is like freaking out. He's pacing around. He's thinking it's a simple thing to just get gas and come home. So they end up filing a missing persons report with the Orange County Sheriff because that's where Laguna Niguel is. The police ask AT&T to do an emergency ping to locate Bryce's phone. And it hits in Button Willow at 9 p.m. And he's only 8 miles away from where he was at the rest stop. And he was on a road called Lagoon Drive. He's been there for 12 hours at this point. So at 9 p.m., the Kern County Sheriff deputies find him in his car, and he's just sitting there. They said that he was acting really normal. He was alert. He was answering all the questions that they asked. The police conducted sobriety tests, and he passed all of them. They searched his car with his consent, and he was cleared.
Wait, it was clear of drugs, you mean?
Yeah, like drugs and alcohol, those kind of things.
So where was all his Vyvanse? Maybe he saw the police coming, so he took a whole handful of the Vyvanse, and that's why he was like super alert and like did really well on the sobriety exercises, like doing backflips. Like,
the police said, what are you doing? And he said, he's just blowing off some steam. So the deputies are like, okay, where are you going? And he said that he's headed to Laguna Niguel, where his parents live. So the only thing that really struck the police as odd is that Bryce really didn't want to call his parents. He seemed very reluctant to get on the phone and call them. He didn't really give a reason, but the police encouraged him to call, and they even dialed the number for him and gave him the phone.
Well, but also, like, think about it from Bryce's perspective. Like, he's just trying to live his life and, like, break up with his girl, and all these people are calling his mom, and the mom keeps calling him, and he just wants a minute, you know?
Yeah. Karen asked the police, like, are you sure he's okay? Are you sure he's okay to drive? And the deputy said, yeah, you know, he's totally fine. He passed all the sobriety tests. He was just sitting here blowing off some steam. So after hearing that reassurance from the police, his parents felt comfortable letting him drive the rest of the way. And Karen didn't really push him to explain his behavior. So she's like, okay, what are you doing? And he said that he was putting stuff back in his car because the police searched it. And she said, I'm really worried
about you. That's a really literal response.
Yeah. So she's like, okay, well, I'm really worried about you. It's getting dark. Have you eaten? Have you slept? Like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm going to go hang out with some friends later. So
in Button Willow?
He never specified. She's like, okay, well, come home. And the police leave him because to them, everything's okay. Everything's normal. He's just a college kid blowing off some steam on the side of the road. At 11 p.m., he did stop at a gas station in Button Willow, which is 2 hours later after the search. So from 9 to 11, we don't know what he was doing. But he did spend $1.71 on a drink from the gas station and $39 worth of gas. So he finally filled up his tank from the morning. Christian returns an earlier call from Karen.
Wait, Christian is the roadside assistance guy?
Yes.
So I guess Karen called him earlier and he hadn't answered, so then she called the police.
Yeah.
So at that time, yeah, he realized she called, so he called her back?
Yeah. Christian said, if Bryce is still in Button Willow, I'll go check on him. And Karen's like, no, he should be on his way home by now. He should be home soon. So Christian's like, you know what? I'm just going to go over there anyway. He gets to where Bryce was, and Bryce is still there. So at now, he's been in Button Willow for 13 hours. So
what in the world is he doing for 13 hours?
I don't know. That's
alone.
Like, yeah.
He was alone every time, right?
He was alone every time that, like, I guess an adult went to go check on him. But
well, what about when the babies went to go check on him?
No, I mean, like, I mean, like, as far
as he is an adult. He's 19.
Yeah, but as far as we know, like, every time a police officer or Christian or someone checked on him, he was alone, but we don't know what he was doing in between those times.
Well, if he was not on the Vyvanse, he was definitely sleeping, I'm sure.
Yeah, so...
like, if you do, a big, binge where you're, on the Vyvanse or Adderall or whatever it is for, a couple days in a row, then you have a big crash and you just, are so tired and you just sleep a ton. I think. So I've heard.
So Christian calls Karen and he's like, yeah, I found him. He's still here. Do you want me to follow him onto the freeway to make sure that he's headed home? And Karen's like, you know what? That'd be great. So about 30 minutes later, Bryce pulls onto the interstate and Christian is following him. Christian follows him for 10 miles and he calls Karen and he's like, okay, I just pulled off, but Bryce is on the interstate. So Karen's like, okay, thank you so much. And she told Bryce, please leave your phone on in case we call you. So the next couple hours, Karen exchanges several calls with Bryce. And Karen and Mike, they want landmarks to know where Bryce is because they want to make sure that he's coming home. They said, give me some street signs, what exit are you at, those kind of things.
Yeah, I would have made you FaceTime me the whole way home.
Yeah. So Bryce won't give her any landmarks or anything like that. But he just keeps saying, my GPS says I'll be home at 3:25 a.m. So now it's the early morning of August 30th, which is...
Friday. So he left his girlfriend's house on Wednesday night, and now it's Friday morning.
Yeah. So at 1:50 a.m., Bryce calls his mom to tell her that he detoured. There was a detour on I-5, so he got off, but now he's back on. So I'm assuming that he's telling her this to say, there's a little bit of a delay and he won't be home at exactly 3:25. So at 2:09 a.m., about 20 minutes later, Karen talked to Bryce for the last time. He said that he got off the I-5 and he's in a suburban area. He's going to sleep in his car to get some rest. He's been on the road for 24 to 27 hours and he's been awake for almost 48 if he stayed up all night to play video games. So Karen didn't argue. She's like, okay, get some rest, call me in the morning and come home. So at 8 a.m., the doorbell rings at the Las Pisa house and she's like, oh good, Bryce is home. But it was the California Highway Patrol. And they wanted to ask Mike and Karen if they have a 2003 Toyota Highlander. And they're like, yeah, that's our son Bryce's car. They said that they found it abandoned in Castaic Lake.
They found it abandoned, upside down. So Bryce's car was found on an access road to Castaic Lake State Recreation Area. This is a huge man-made lake that people often go fishing in. A worker at the lake found Bryce's car just before 5:30 a.m. And it just so happened that the police had a training exercise going on there. So they were on scene right after 5:30 and the worker notified them right away. Where they found Bryce's car is 2 hours north of Laguna Niguel, where Bryce's parents live. When the police found the car, Bryce was not inside. His car was crashed on the road on its side across from the lake's main boat access. It was at the bottom of a 25-foot embankment. The back window had been broken out from the inside. Even though this sounds like it's a really bad car accident, it's not like he drove over a cliff and his car turned upside down a bunch of times. That's not what happened. This 25-foot embankment is more of a long hill, not a steep cliff. They think that he wasn't hurt because the airbags did not deploy. The crash didn't seem to be that bad. Once they turned the car onto its wheels, the car was actually drivable. There was no blood found in the car except for really small droplets of blood. So if he was injured, it was either a closed head injury or it was a nosebleed or a scrape or scratch. His laptop and his phone were found inside the car. He had a duffel bag and his wallet outside the car by the rear window on the ground unzipped. So it kind of looked like he had taken something out of his duffel bag, but he left all of his valuables. There was a small spot of Bryce's blood on the passenger headrest and the back seat, but he probably walked away relatively unharmed. At least at this point, that's what the police are thinking. And Karen thinks that he's wandering around somewhere because, from an injury or maybe hiding because he thinks he's going to get in trouble from the accident. But everybody at this point thinks that he's still alive.
So what it's looking like is Bryce drove off of Lake Hughes Road into a service area towards a cell tower at the top of a steep, rugged embankment. Based on the tire tracks, it looked like he drove alongside of the cell tower, continuing towards the lake and continued down the hill. And it looked like he was accelerating because he was unearthing really large rocks. So he was going fast. So it's not like he was just losing his brakes from falling asleep or he was in neutral or something. He was accelerating, and he fell that 25 feet to the road below. Investigators say that the car fell on its front bumper and then onto its side. And his actions seemed really deliberate. So from the top of the embankment, it really looks like the lake is closer to the edge than it actually is. Like it does, you can't really see the road below.
So they're thinking that maybe he drove off the cliff like to kill himself.
According to his friends, 2 weeks before class started, right when he moved into his apartment, his behavior started getting reckless. So he was drinking hard liquor, like 2 bottles every weekend.
I mean, how many bottles of liquor do you drink in a weekend as a college student, Lauren? I mean, that doesn't seem that unusual, but anyway.
No, it really doesn't. Like, I definitely do know people that can drink that much, especially if it's, like, not all in one night, like if it's throughout the weekend. So this has kind of become a big question in the investigation is kind of, is this substance abuse or is he just a normal college kid? So Kim, his girlfriend, tells the police that when he was at her place, he was under the influence of alcohol and Vyvanse, and that's why she didn't want him driving. And when they broke up, he did text her and he said, "You're better off without me." And then Sean tells police that Bryce gave away his Xbox and his diamond earrings. So he was giving away his possessions, and that kind of indicated like suicidal behavior or maybe running away.
Yeah, but then I also saw in an interview that his roommate did that he was like expecting him to come back any minute and like left his shoes by the door for him.
So police and investigators kind of think that he left with the idea that he wasn't going back. They think that the heavy alcohol use and Vyvanse combined could have led to a psychotic break. His parents say that he experimented with drinking and drugs like a normal teen. They said that it was average. It wasn't substance abuse. There was a couple incidences, but it wasn't a serious problem. And we'll get into more of that in a little bit. But his parents knew that he was underage drinking. They kept wondering what changed in those 2 weeks because he seemed perfectly fine over the summer that he was living with them. And they think that they were so close that if he had a problem, he wouldn't be ashamed to talk to them about it.
So let's get into the search for Bryce, because at this point they get to his car, he's not there, and they think that he wandered off. So Bryce, as far as they know, is unfamiliar with the area. He had never hitchhiked before. He hated being outside. He wasn't a camper. He wasn't a Boy Scout. The police searched Castaic Lake for several days and found nothing. If he took his own life, then he must have continued on foot into the lake, like walked in, or he disappeared somewhere inside the 11,000-acre park. They organized searches by the Parks Bureau and the police. Hundreds of deputies and volunteers came. They were on foot. They had ATVs. They had helicopters. They had search and rescue. They had cadaver dogs trained to find human remains. They had divers in the lake and boats searching the lake. Mike was making missing person flyers and putting them everywhere. Karen was trying to contact any and all types of media. In the following days, there were no viable leads. There was no evidence of any kind found. No phone calls or texts were made or card usage on his credit cards, but his phone was in his car and so was his wallet. So that kind of explains that. On September 4th, 2013, so just a few days later, a jogger called 911 to report a brush fire in Castaic Lake. And this was 3 miles from where Bryce's car was found. And the cause of that fire was a burning body. And this caused a huge uproar because it was a male body and it wasn't identified for several days, maybe even weeks. It turned out not to be Bryce, but this put like kind of a pinch in the search because...
A stop in it?
Not a stop, because people still searched. They weren't sure. I think the police knew right away that it wasn't Bryce, but they didn't tell his parents, which is awful. Or they did, and the parents couldn't tell everybody else. But if you read the Web Sleuth comments and the Facebook page comments, because they have a Facebook group, Find Bryce Les Pisa, if you read the comments during this time in between when they find the burning body and they determine that it wasn't Bryce, people were still searching. So the search efforts were not stopped. But a lot of people did think that this was him, so it might have put kind of a damper on the mood.
Totally killed the mood.
It did, but it wasn't Bryce. And Karen and his friends were hopeful that it wasn't Bryce because they didn't think that it was. Because even if he was suicidal, you're not going to set your own body on fire. So at that point, there's no evidence to indicate any foul play or suicide. All they have is Bryce's car, his things still in it, and him missing. So there's no body. If he died, they would have found him. They did have surveillance camera that captured still images of car license plates in the area of where his car was driving on Lake Hughes Road.
And that's from where he drove off of.
Right. And 3 hours before the crash, he's seen on camera traveling up Lake Hughes Road at 2:15 a.m., which was 6 minutes after he called his mom to say he was going to sleep somewhere. And we don't know how long he was there or what he was doing or where he was, because, again, this camera just takes pictures of the license plates. It doesn't, like, give any other good info. But then 2 hours later at 4:29 a.m., there's another picture taken of his license plate by that camera traveling up the same exact road in the same direction, which, if this was Bryce, it's really weird that he would be driving the same way unless he pulled off to sleep for a couple hours and then he woke up and went to drive home but realized he was driving the wrong way and went to turn around, and the place that he turned around is where he drove off the cliff. There was images captured of a car that was a minute behind him, but it turned out to be local fishermen and they were cleared.
But during these 2 hours between the first time he drove up the road and the second time, investigators think that he was contemplating something, like maybe contemplating going home to his parents' house, going home to his apartment, maybe thinking about the breakup that he just had, maybe thinking about suicide and driving off the cliff.
Or maybe he was sleeping.
Right. They kind of don't even say anything about him sleeping, but to me that kind of seems the most logical. On day 9 of searching, the police bring in bloodhounds to track his scent. And they use shoes and socks that were carefully collected as instructed by law enforcement by Bryce's girlfriend, and they were sent overnight via FedEx. So the bloodhounds traced from Bryce's car over to a dam near the lake, and then across the dam to a roadway access, and then to a truck stop. And two separate bloodhounds both followed this trail, but then it disappeared. So the detective's theory is that Bryce chose to walk away from his own life. He went towards the truck stop to avoid witnesses and roadways and then just vanished at the truck stop. So at this point in the investigation, they kind of believe that maybe he's with a long-haul trucker. But it's weird that he lingered in Buttonwillow for so long with no explanation. And that kind of ties in with the reluctance or dilemma theory that he wanted to walk away from his own life. And they think that there is one question that would solve this case. And that's, what did he want to talk to his mom about? Because they think that this subject is what forced him to walk away from his own life. But his parents think that this holds absolutely no significance to his disappearance. They think that one statement saying that I have a lot to talk to you about, mom, they think that that doesn't mean that he wanted to walk away from his own life. And Karen keeps saying that the bond that she shared with her son trumps any evidence that they have. He would never run away. He had no problem big enough to disappear from his life. So months pass with no new leads or evidence, and investigators only have dead ends. They expended every resource to them, and they even searched the lake again a year later, and they didn't find him in the lake. And a lot of tips were coming in about sightings, but there were no conversations reported with him, so there were always false alarms. His dental records, DNA, fingerprints, social security number, everything like that has been entered into NamUs, and no unidentified male has ever been matched to him. In August of 2014, a private investigator offered to help the Las Pisa family search for Bryce, and she offered this to them pro bono. And she was super frustrated by the lack of evidence, and she believed that the truth lies in his GPS records, because he was going home. He was set to go home. She thinks that maybe he suffered a head or brain injury as a result of the car crash, because there doesn't have to be a lot of blood to have a brain injury. Like some people, she said, walk away with concussions and they don't know who they are. Like, who knows what could have happened to him in this car crash. So his parents think now that he's probably alive, he suffered a head injury, he doesn't know who he is, or maybe
he suffered like a psychotic break.
Right, they wonder about a psychotic break fueled from the Vyvanse, because ages 18 to 25, men are most likely,
prime time, yeah.
Yeah, men are most likely to develop psychotic illnesses such as bipolar or schizophrenia or have psychotic breaks. So people think that maybe he suffered from a mental illness, or maybe it was so he took so much of the Vyvanse that that caused a break, or maybe they kind of went hand in hand.
So Bryce has a very distinctive look. He has fire engine red hair, blue eyes, pierced ears, a bull tattoo with Roman numerals on his left shoulder. He's 5'11", 170 pounds. He wears like a size 12 shoe. He was last seen wearing white cargo shorts, blue and white checkered t-shirt, and red and white Nikes. Now he would be about 26 years old. There are age progression photos that you can see, and we'll have them on our Instagram. But even though that look is very distinctive, and you know that redheads are only 2% of the entire population, even though that, there have been so many sightings of homeless people with red hair posted on the Find Bryce Lost Pizza Facebook page. It's like every time somebody sees a redheaded homeless person, they post pictures to try to help the family, which is great because they really do believe that he is alive and just doesn't know who he is, or doesn't, you know, is just like homeless and wandering. So the first thing that we want to talk about now that we've gone through the timeline and the search is that the trip from Chico to Laguna Niguel should have only taken 8 hours, but instead it took him 2 days and he never even reached his destination. So was he stalling his arrival, or was he waiting for somebody, or was he doing something? So what do you think about the burning body? Like a coincidence?
Some people think maybe he witnessed something he wasn't supposed to, but I think the timeline doesn't really add up. Maybe these people that were burning a body saw the search on TV and they thought maybe we should dump him here. They'll think that it's him.
Oh, that's smart. Because they found out who those murder, like who killed that guy, right? And lit him on fire. It was like a love triangle or something, like totally unrelated.
Yeah. There are some more like weird texts and kind of cryptic messages that people really try to put a lot into. So like to Kim, him texting her, "You're better off without me." People think that maybe that's indicating like him wanting to kill himself. Or to his roommate, Sean, he texted him the night that he disappeared, "I love you, bro. Seriously, you're the best person I've ever met. You saved my soul."
Yeah, but I know for sure that both Kim and Sean do not think that he was going to commit suicide. I know that Kim doesn't think that because her own mother committed suicide 2 years before Bryce went missing. And she used to talk about it all the time with Bryce. And Bryce would always tell her, like, suicide is never an acceptable way out. Like, I don't know if maybe he was telling her that to make her feel better, but she's very adamant that he would never kill himself. And then his roommate, Sean, he said that he did not think that Bryce was going to kill himself, that he was, that he told his roommate that he was coming back on Labor Day. He said that he packed up a few things and was like, "I'll be back on Labor Day. See you soon." And he totally fully expected Bryce to just come right back.
And what's really interesting is that the Lost Pizzas really portray Bryce as a good kid who had no issues. But Lindsay and I did some digging into his Facebook profile and his other social media, and it kind of says otherwise.
We did see some pictures and comments from his friends that led us to believe that he was a very typical, normal kid that liked to get drunk and get high and do stupid things. So we should probably also mention that Bryce was on probation until July prior to him going missing. So 1 month before he went missing, he was on probation, which is why his parents said that he was so good over the summer, because he had to take drug tests regularly. He was on probation because he had an arrest back in Illinois for possession. I think it was marijuana. And he worked out a deal where if he did this like probation program that it would get, you know, like a lesser conviction type of a thing. So he had to regularly take drug tests, and his friends said that he knew how to, like, you know, party around it. Like, he knew when the drug test was coming up, but all in all, he was getting drug tested regularly and he was passing. So it's not surprising to me that his parents thought his partying was relatively light that summer.
I'll read some of the Facebook posts that he has made. A few years before he disappeared, he goes, "Wow, just got pulled over. Not a good way to end a night." And Karen, his mom, she was always commenting on his Facebook posts.
Which is cute.
Yeah, on this one, Bryce said that he might have a court date, and Karen goes, sometimes life sucks, but we learn from our mistakes.
Which is like a perfect example of her being fully aware of everything that he's doing and still being supportive to him.
Right. So when he got pulled over that night, he blew through a stoplight while he was videotaping a huge accident.
And he would say stuff like, rolling papers in dime bag equals getting popped again. But I think it meant by his mom, not the police.
Right.
So the most interesting thing that I found on Bryce's personal Facebook page was a picture that he posted, and we're going to put this on our Instagram, where there's like tire tracks on grass showing that he drove his car up the curb into the grass around it like a light pole and in front of another car. And
he posted this as his cover photo, and someone commented, Bryce, what happened? Is that a cop car behind you? And Karen comments, fortunately, no one was hurt. Maybe you'll learn to slow down. A lot of his friends were commenting like, Bryce, be careful. This reminds me of when we went to TGI Fridays. Haha. Someone goes, Bryce, you shouldn't have a license. So it kind of seems like he was a really reckless driver.
Right. But what's really interesting about this particular picture is that as soon as I read about how his car crashed, it's like it clicked in my head, because the way that his accident happened when he drove off the embankment, you would have to maneuver around like kind of like a gate and a fence around the cell tower. But if Bryce had been going the wrong way and realized it, he could have picked that spot to turn around to go back to the highway and overshot his turnaround, like not realizing there was a drop off there. Right. Because turning around, his tire tracks would have looked just like in the picture that he posted on Facebook of him driving recklessly around the cars that were in the street that day. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it seems super similar to something that he has been doing many times. And I can totally see him trying to do that around the cell tower, even if it wasn't a turnaround, like maybe just for fun, like go a little off-roading and flipping off the side of the embankment, not knowing that.
Right. Either it was too dark for him to see that it was a drop-off, or he didn't realize that there was like a drop-off. Because the police were like, oh, he accelerated, so he must have intentionally gone off this embankment, like to hurt himself. But if he was accelerating because he was turning around, or maybe he got stuck and was like accelerating, not even seeing that there was a drop off. I don't know, but I don't think that the fact that he was accelerating means that he was trying to kill himself, because of what we saw on Facebook of him being kind of a reckless and stupid driver. So I really do personally think that it was an accident.
So there are basically four main theories of what could have happened to Bryce and why he's missing still today. So I'll go over them really quickly and then we'll talk about them. But the first one is foul play. The second one is he commits suicide. The third one is that he's alive and well. And then the fourth one is that he's alive and disabled, or suffered a head injury that he doesn't know who he is. He's disabled. He's living in the homeless community. So meeting with foul play, I feel like that really relates to the fact that he walked to a truck stop, or that his scent was traced to a truck stop.
Yeah, for there to be foul play involved, either he crashed his car and then he was like, shit, I gotta go get help. So he like walked to the truck stop to get help, and he was like intercepted by a random trucking serial killer, coincidentally. Or he hitchhiked, and while he was hitchhiking, he was met with foul play. I mean, they're very sure that he was alive at the time that he exited the vehicle. So in order for him to meet with foul play after, he would have had to like still ran away from the crash, but then after that met with foul play. Maybe he overdosed after. But another theory about the foul play is that there was foul play in Button Willow, and that it wasn't actually Bryce in the car when he went over. Like the car was staged or dumped.
Yeah,
I don't,
they were trying to get rid of it.
Yeah, I don't believe that personally, but that is a theory.
I don't really believe that either, because he called his mom 5 minutes before he was shown going into the lake.
I think that he was sleeping all day. So if he was sleeping all day, why would he need to pull off to sleep some more just to wake up just in time to sit in traffic? That would suck. Unless he was like, okay, I'll set my alarm and get up at 4. You know, if I get on the road by 4:30, I won't hit the traffic. And then when he got up, he was, like, going the wrong way. So he tried to turn around, and then his car rolled.
His uncle is a verified user on Web Sleuth, and he posted so much information. And one of the things that really stuck out to him was a theory that came from a psychic. And he said that he doesn't believe in psychics at all, but this one just really, really stuck out to him. So a medium contacted Karen, Bryce's mom, and she gained a little bit of information about the case, and she told her that she may or may not be able to help. She really only works with law enforcement, and she's never reached out to a family before. So this psychic, this medium, is gathering more and more information about the case, and she keeps saying that she's seeing really specific small objects at Castaic Lake, and she wants to go there with one of Bryce's family members to try to figure out what happened. So she talks a lot about a red bandana and talks about the dogs, and apparently one of the search dogs wore a red bandana. Apparently, she found everything that she saw, and she tracked Bryce's path exactly as the dogs did, like to the truck stop. And she thinks that he's alive. She sees that the wind got knocked out of him during the crash. He hit his stomach, he hit his head. He might be a little confused, but the most interesting thing that she sees is she sees a purple truck with the name Patsy on the door. She sees a waitress talking to a man, but she can't really see his face. She thinks maybe it's a truck driver. And she thinks maybe she's seeing this through Bryce's eyes. Patsy could be a wife or a girlfriend or a name on the passenger door when the trucker gave him a ride. But all in all, the uncle, I don't know if he necessarily believes this, but this did stick out to him, so I wanted to mention it.
So either he went to the truck stop and hitched a ride and the trucker killed him, or he went to the truck stop and hitched a ride and now he's just riding around with truckers, or he got a ride somewhere else and now he's wandering homeless. A lot of people believe, the majority of people believe that he is alive and he is living in the homeless community. Either he is like schizophrenic or disabled from a head injury, or he is just choosing to be a part of that community. His parents think that he is either dead and his remains have not been found, or he is out there and does not know who he is. They think it's impossible that he would intentionally be alive and not contact them. They hope he's not dead, but they can't in their head imagine him not wanting to come home. His girlfriend, 2 months after he went missing, thought that there could be one of three outcomes. Either he's in some kind of medical place, like he's in rehab, or he has amnesia and he's in a hospital. But she doesn't think that he's in rehab because she doesn't think he's in like a drug addict. Like the Vyvanse was like only taken a couple times, you know. But the Vi taking the Vyvanse could have scared him into thinking that he needed help, so maybe he went to the rehab center. She tried calling different hospitals and rehab centers, but because of HIPAA, they couldn't tell her if he was there. The other scenario is that he's hiding. She said that he makes friends really easily, that it would be really easy for her to see him making friends with homeless people. She thinks that the homeless community protects each other, and she thinks it's also possible that someone he knows is hiding him. That maybe he wanted to take a break from reality after he took the Vyvanse, and maybe he's like hiding out, embarrassed that everybody's looking for him because there was so much media attention at that time. And then the third is that he is dead, and she personally thinks that he is alive and not dead. At least she did 2 months after he went missing. I don't know what she thinks now, but she does not think that he would kill himself like I told you before. Her mom did, and he always said that he would never do that. And if he is dead, it would have to have been from foul play because maybe the Vyvanse made him piss somebody off. I don't know. But those are just the theories that she threw out there. So, Lauren, what do we think?
I think that he wasn't trying to kill himself. Like, at first, when I first heard about this case, I thought it was a possibility and I kind of believed that. But after doing so much more research and digging into his own personal life, like not just things that we saw in the news, but stuff that he posted himself, I really can see him like driving off the side of the road, like maybe to get a little like rush of adrenaline or just to turn around and something happening, like it truly being an accident.
I do think it's important to point out that Bryce had a roommate in the dorms. We talked about him earlier,
Kavina.
Nick Covina, and they had a falling out before they moved out of the dorms. And a news reporter interviewed Nick, like right after Bryce went missing, and he told this reporter, negative things about Bryce. Like, he said that Bryce was evicted from the dorms, and that's not true. So this kid who is talking shit about a missing friend, ex-friend, to a reporter when the entire country is looking for him, that just rubs me the wrong way. And then he also told people that he called Bryce, or we found out from phone records, right? What happened? He called Bryce the morning he went missing before anyone even knew he was missing?
I did see that somewhere, but when I went back to find the source, I really couldn't find it. So honestly, like, I don't know if it came from a really credible source or if it came from a theory, but I do vividly remember seeing that he called Bryce the next morning around like 8 a.m., like way after his car was found, and they hadn't talked in like a year. So that like really stuck out to me, that after a year, he suddenly goes missing and then a couple hours later gets a call.
Yeah, that is really weird to me too. And the biggest mystery in this case is not where Bryce is, but what in the hell was he doing for all those hours in Button Willow? I want to know what he was doing in Button Willow. What is nearby where his car was? Is it, you know, like a complete desolate area? I've read two different things. I've read that there's a lot of like restaurants and hotels nearby. I've read also that it's a very desolate area. There's nothing there. So I don't know. I'm not from that area. I've never been to that area, but that I would like to know what he was doing all that time. I think it would definitely give me more information for me to make an opinion on whether he was going to kill himself or not. I think, or if there was foul play, like maybe he, you know, like you said, witnessed something like the burning body people, or I don't know. I don't know if Buttonwillow is like a good neighborhood or a bad neighborhood. I don't know. And I don't want to like create suspects, but this Christian guy, I don't know. Everyone seems to think he's like so helpful, but like it's kind of suspicious to me. But I think that he probably was definitely cleared. Everybody talks really highly of him, and I don't want to talk badly about him, but that did stick out to me too. The fact that he went back so many times to check on Bryce.
And the fact that he like followed him around midnight.
Right. And if I was Bryce and on Vyvanse, I'd be like, who the fuck is this guy following me? Keep coming to me. Like, I would be freaking out. Like, and Karen's on the phone with him. Like, mom, why are you calling these people to have them follow me? That would have totally fed into his paranoia. Like, I can only imagine. And like, I don't know. Like, what was he doing in his car the whole time? If he was just sitting in his car, if he wasn't sleeping, like, was he playing Candy Crush? Was he smoking cigarettes and drinking Monster? Because, like, that's what people do on Vyvanse, right? I don't know. Like, also, when did he run out of gas and how long did he wait before he called for that gas? So, Bryce has never been found. His family is very hopeful that he is still alive. If you have ever seen anyone that looks like Bryce, you know, make a comment on the Finding Bryce Les Pisa Facebook group. If you ever come across someone that looks like Bryce now, even if you're outside of California, please take a photo and post it to the Find Bryce Les Pisa Facebook group. And if you have any information about Bryce's case, please call 949-292-4400. That's Lauren's cell phone number. I'm just kidding. It's for the police. All of our sources will be posted in our episode notes. As always, you can find us on Instagram at Murderlicious Podcast, and you can send us an email to murderliciouspodcast@gmail.com. I did try to set up a Facebook group and a Facebook page. I mean, I did. I don't really know what I'm doing, but hopefully that will become a really fun place for us all to chat with each other. We would love if you would comment on our Instagram or Facebook, if you would subscribe. Oh, Lauren just uploaded all of our episodes to YouTube. If you prefer to listen to podcasts on YouTube, we're now there. Where can they find us on there, Lauren?
I think you can just search Murderlicious Podcast. I don't think YouTube has like usernames, but if you search Murderlicious Podcast, you'll see our logo immediately.
Yeah, so definitely check us out there. We are blown away by all of your guys' support, and you're encouraging us to keep going, and we are. So we hope that you enjoyed this week's episode, and we'll see you next week.